He's wearing a Roddy Collins jacket. He's got his teeth done like Ross from Friends. He's looking magnificent, and he's ready to go.
Just for the pod, lads.
Just for the pod.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
We're going to be getting Kenny's reaction to the Champions League this midweek. We're going to have Dermot Corrigan with us after 8 to go through some of the storylines from the Spanish side of things in the Champions League. And on the rugby front, Luke Fitzgerald will be with us after 8:30 to look ahead to the first weekend of the Heineken Champions Cup. After 9, though, is the big one. It is the second part of ODBAM's gift guide for Christmas 2021. Jess Kelly will be with us in studio to go through some of the tech that you need to get your hands on, with 16 days to go officially now until Christmas. It's getting close, Kenny. Today is Gadgets Morning.
It's too long to wait to get Jess into the studio. Personally, let's get her in now. Roll her in. Let's park all the football discussion for the next 3 hours.
How are you fixed for Christmas? Out.
Oh, struggling as always. Now, I'm. There's no pressure, really. I don't put myself under pressure, and I haven't done for quite some time in terms of getting presents. You know, those days of feeling guilty about, putting a token in a card and handing it to people are long gone. Long gone. Absolutely no problems now whatsoever, taking the easy option.
It's about the love you give, not the presents you give.
Yeah, I'm almost reveling it now, just reveling it, just kind of, you know, put the card in the hand, put the Christmas card in there. They know what's inside, I know. They know I haven't made much of an effort, etc, etc. It's all in the eye contact. It's just accepted now, it's par for the course.
What is it, like a voucher?
It's just who's going to top each other in terms of the amount of the voucher, really, isn't it?
Right.
How much have you put in there? If you give me 20, if you try to top me, if you put 30 in there, try to embarrass me, I'm going to put 35 just so I get one up on you.
And is this, you're going to be a flush year for the vouchers?
Well, the problem with that this year is, as I see it, your get out of jail card was always chapters, wasn't it? Parnell Square. So obviously they're going through it a little bit, aren't they? The doors look as if they're closing down there, which is a sad day, really. But yeah, so I'm just thinking, it's a bit of a dilemma now, isn't it?
Mm.
You hand somebody a voucher, but it's time to go to use in the new year. Good luck. So, you know, the chapters is no more.
So like all your people that you would give presents to were all book lovers, and you would tend to give them chapters vouchers.
I hope they're book lovers. I don't really. I don't give it that much thought. It is, yeah. I like to start actually in there, to be honest. Which I always think of it myself. It's a selfish thing, isn't it? You think, well, if I was to get a receive a boot voucher from there, I'd be reasonably happy. It's a nice place to spend a bit of time, I think. You got the second hand area upstairs, don't they? And obviously the big area downstairs. Well, I hope they survive, to be honest with you. No, kind of laughing a little bit, but it's a bit of a feature on the north side of the city, chapters, I think, like, you know what I mean? So yeah, I was listening to the owner talk there some time ago. He was a little bit pessimistic in terms of their chances of surviving, but I think quite people have rallied around. I think they've had a bit of business footfall since then, when people became aware of the fact that I think it might be disappearing. They've, you know, been in there and spending the money. Hopefully that'll be sufficient to keep the store going. It's sad to see the old retail outlets disappear. Particularly on the north side, Alan.
Yeah,
we're struggling
true.
As it is, like, you know. So, yeah, so we'll see. So, yeah, might have to, that's, you know, don't be spending like 30 euro on a book token, and then it's like a double whack, and then they can't use it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a bit of an awkward one, that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
You feel obligated then to give them like a cash substitute, you know.
Well, like, I mean,
you're out of pocket for the start with the book token.
Well, that's it, exactly.
They haven't cashed in the person you've given the present to. So is there an obligation on your part that you've got to stump up another, you know, 30 in cash or something, Mark?
Or just give them cash in the first place. I don't care how, you know, jammy it looks rather than a voucher, but just to be safe, you could always just give them 30 euro voucher. Or 30 euro cash, I should say.
Yeah, but you can always kid yourself on with a voucher that you've made a token gesture of an effort, you know, and in terms of giving somebody a Christmas present, the cash is really a kind of literally, there you go, I literally could not be asked.
Yeah.
Where the token, I think, for chapters is always, you can make an argument. Well, you know, I wrestled with a few things, and eventually I thought, no, the book token, you know, that suits you, you know what I mean? You can kind of rationalise that to yourself, can't you, between your ears. The cash options is, isn't it? You got to hold your hands up. I just love it.
I like that shout. A book voucher for Christmas. It's a spoiler for anybody later on. It is going to be mostly tech that we're talking about later. Like, is this something that gets you excited? Are you somebody who like thrives about the fact that we're so close to Christmas that you're like, bring it on, bring on the excitement? Do you like Christmas?
I think probably the lead up to Christmas, there's a little bit of that buzz factor potentially this year. I'm not too sure. I was in the shops there, was it last week or not too, a few days ago, and I was surprised actually how busy it was. A little bit of a buzz around the place. So I think it's more so the lead up, that Christmas week. I think Christmas Eve potentially, if you've got to pop into town Christmas Eve, you know, everybody heading around the place, you know, hopefully that'll still be the case this year. Yeah, but the actual Christmas week, I must admit, it's a funny one. Since I finished playing, what most players think, it's a strange one, really, like, you know what I mean? You know, just so busy when you're playing that Christmas, New Year period, the schedules and everything. It's a selfish thing, really. It's all about the football, the focus, preparation, you know what I mean? That kind of drives everything. You know, the family kind of have to kind of fit in and around that, don't they?
Did you train on Christmas Day most years?
Yeah, pretty much always. Yeah, always. Came in there. If there was a home game, say Stephen's Day, we were playing at home, yeah, we'd be in Christmas Day, reasonably early, have the session, and then be back home with the families Christmas Day, and then arrive in for the game Stephen's Day. The tricky one is if you're away Stephen's Day and you had a bit of a distance to travel, then really that usually then you'd arrive in Christmas afternoon, about, you'd have dinner at home,
right,
then arrive at maybe 3 o'clock in the afternoon Christmas Day, have your session, and then get on the bus and go Christmas night. So that was a little bit of a blow for maybe the lads there with young families at the time. That was a little bit of a wrench, not so much for the younger lads. But yeah, but that initial first couple of years when I finished playing, it was a little bit of a oof, you know,
like anticlimax sort of thing.
Yeah, definitely. I used to get out to a couple of games, maybe doing a little bit of work TV wise, you know, going to a few games Stephen's Day, so that would be grand. New Year's, yeah, but I really enjoy the football. It's an obvious thing that week. It'd be a sad day if we were to miss, talking about chapters disappearing on the north side, if we ever lost that Christmas New Year's schedule. I think a lot of talk about that winter break coming in, it has been for some years, but I think they ever do it, they have to do it kind of the early January period. I think it'd be a massive own goal for the league itself, and a load of different levels, people, the whole thing, if that week, you know, that Christmas to New Year week was to be lost.
You get to Stephen's Day, you wake up and you're like, right, I'm just sick of everybody at this point, just turn on the football. It's been three full days.
I was going to say sick football. Of the turkey, but you're not quite.
No,
Stephen's morning. That'd have to be the day after. Probably not even the day after that.
No,
probably day number four, is it?
Day two is sandwiches. Day three is sandwiches. Day four, sometimes you could put the turkey
sandwiches.
Into a curry. Oh, yeah.
You, do you not have the turkey dinner on the
sorry,
on Stephen's?
You'd have the turkey dinner
you
as well.
Go again,
sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, you wake up. What's your breakfast on Stephen's Day?
Yeah. Casserole. It'd be turkey casserole now, tour day.
Day three.
More or less. Yeah, day three. Does the turkey survive?
We go turkey curry rather than casserole.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like world's changed, isn't it?
So it has changed.
It turns upside down, isn't it? It's turned upside down. You'd never got away with that back in the day.
No, I can imagine. I feel ashamed saying it in front of
town. You'd have been run out of town on the estates.
Yeah.
Enough, people got a whiff of that turkey curry. The priest had been called and everything. Does a turkey really survive the fourth day of Christmas? Christmas Day?
I think it does.
Yeah, it's a hell of a turkey, isn't it?
The juices get to know one another quite well by that stage. It's how the turkey operates. So yeah, plenty of that coming up. The one thing I meant to ask you as well, actually, before we tell you what's coming up, is are you lights up on the 9th of December sort of guy or not? Like, are you going home now after this and the decorations are all up?
Oh, that's down to me. That's down to other people to make. I'm not in terms of, is it the 8th?
Today's
the 9th. Country folk. Sorry to be, that's not
no,
too condescending.
No, you used the politically correct term. You could have used two phrases there that would have been a lot worse.
Our country friends. How about that? Would that be, is that more condescending?
Our comrades from down the country.
That's the traditional day up to. I'd forgotten about that. Somebody reminded me of it yesterday. Yeah, I do remember a little bit of that back in. Was that genuinely the case? Not from Kerry.
Not from Kerry. We were too far away. So I think it's more from people in the Midlands and things like that.
You
maybe.
Were just buzzing getting into Killarney. That was cosmopolitan area down. That was like.
I was saying
might as well have been arriving in New York, arriving in Killarney High Street back then. Is that right?
I was saying it to somebody else the other day actually that Cork felt like the most exotic place in the world when I was 10 or 11. Like that was like this
right?
metropolis, this bustling. Metropolis. So no, I mean we have enough.
Oh, Dublin must have been. Dublin was just like, does it really exist? Is that like
Dublin's
utopia?
A bad place.
Utopia.
That's where bad things
never,
happen.
Never, oh, never.
Yeah. So you are lights up potentially, but you don't actually know. That's the answer that I'm getting here. You don't actually know.
No, I don't. Not to that extent. Yeah. That's a little bit. It's a little bit anal, isn't it? I think in terms of you have to go up at a certain day and be down by. No, don't buy into that.
Right, OTBAM is brought to you by Gillette. Good morning, start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. Let's tell you what's coming up this morning on OTBAM. We're going to get stuck into some of the football talking points over the next little while. And at 8:15, Dermot Corrigan will hop on a call to chat through Barcelona getting knocked out of the Champions League last night. They are officially a Europa League team. We'll be talking Atletico, we'll be talking Real Madrid with him as well. It is a Madrid derby this weekend, so plenty to get stuck into with him. The sports page is coming your way at 8:30, and then the sports news at 8:40 with news this morning that Limerick have got 12 all-stars in the hurling front, which is a record by quite a distance. They have smashed the previous record across both codes, the Dublin footballers, the Kilkenny hurlers, the Kerry team of the 1980s. They only managed to get 9 in a single year. Limerick have got 12. The big talking point other than that is that Cork haven't got a single all-star despite making the All-Ireland hurling final. So we'll get John Duggan's take on that a little bit later on. Luke Fitzgerald will be with us at 10 to 9 to look ahead to the weekend's rugby. And then that gift guide, 9:10. You do not want to miss it. We've got the gadgets in the studio, and we've got Jess Kelly in studio at 9:10. And then a bit of last night's football show with Gabriella Marcotti talking to Joe. So it is 7:41 on this Thursday morning. Kenny, we are 2 games into the Ralph Rangnick revolution at Manchester United. We haven't been speaking to you since he's actually got the job. When you see his name up in lights, when you see him come in, are you thinking to yourself, right, this is a good move to get Manchester United to the end of the season?
Well, I suppose time will tell in terms of the what he changes in terms of Manchester United's playing kind of style, stroke, organisation, defensive structure, the whole thing there. On, I could understand in terms of more so medium to long term in terms of his role potentially going forward, and maybe choosing the next Manchester United manager in terms of potential player recruitment. Going forward, it has a pretty impressive CV in that respect, that type of kind of job title at a football club. Although as soon as I was making that kind of argument, then he went and muddied the waters by saying, well, I would be open potentially if this was the guy.
I might give myself the job.
yeah, exactly. I might consider my own CV in the summer. So, yeah, that kind of threw me a little bit for that reason. I said, you're not really kind of separating yourself there from the pro. So I'm exactly sure how that's going to work. But, yeah, I think it's what's needed. I think they've needed a little bit of organisation, a bit more of a game plan. On the pitch, particularly the defensive structure of the team hasn't been good enough, particularly in the games against Liverpool and Manchester City in particular. That was painfully obvious. You can have as many top class individual players on the pitch as well, but if you've got no kind of cohesion in terms of what you're doing, it's not good enough in the modern game against the very best teams, and they're kind of ruthlessly exposed. So yeah, I'm interested and looking forward to seeing it. And haven't seen much, just saw the highlights of the Crystal Palace game of the week. Yeah, I think people go a little bit over the top, saw a little bit of analysis from over the way,
it's one training session, one game, like I'm talking about it on Sunday, like
yeah, exactly, like so. And I'll give him a little bit of time, that little bit of a bounce, kind of new manager, it's always going to be the case, but it'll be interesting to see him just tactically how we assess the team up going forward. So yeah, but it's all to play for, isn't it? I mean, as bad a start as they've had, you look at the table, and Spurs are similar. You're thinking in your head, you're thinking Spurs, oh, it's just what's lost our managers, absolutely turmoil around that place. And then suddenly you look at the table, they're kind of bang on the heels of West Ham, Champions League top 4 places, still very much up for grabs, and for Manchester United and kind of Tottenham respectively. So still a huge amount to play for, factor in the Champions League as well, in a good place. Manchester United kind of tiptoed away through that, haven't they, the Champions League stage. We finished up as group winners, which is what you want to do. So it's amazing, really. Things have changed very quickly. That wouldn't be the first half of the season, teams getting written off, turmoil in the camp, and all of a sudden second half, suddenly it all takes off. Not how you start, where you finish, as they say. So yeah, I think it's just bubbling along nicely. There's a load of subplots there, what's going on in the Premiership, top 3, Champions League, everything, managers, etc. So yeah, I think it's going to be a great second half of the season on a lot of different levels.
Absolutely, you're right. It's very hard to read into Rangnick's first 2 games. Last night he played a team that are never going to play with each other again. That combination of youth and experience, it will be a shock if they ever play together again. It's interesting, though, listening to what he's saying. We can read into this a little bit. Like, he's saying, after we conceded the equaliser, we were not defending high enough or proactive enough. In the end, the score could have been 4-4, and then nobody could have complained. And he said what was a little bit annoying is that we gave the ball away and played too many balls into the first line of their pressing area. Whenever we played the ball into the second or third line, we were always dangerous. I told him that before the game, but they still played it into that first line.
So I don't like to hear too much of that. That's basically kind of like, you know, washing your hands of, well, I've told the players what to do, they're just not prepared to do it. You got to be very careful saying those types of things. They raise a few eyebrows in the dressing room, you know, very quickly players will feel, well, hold on, point the finger here a little bit. So
Donny van de Beek is probably the player. I mean, I'm no expert in football speak here, but it does seem to me that he passed the ball into the first line of their pressing area when Young Boys equalised last night. Has this always been an issue for Manchester United? Like, have they got stuck in their own turf quite a bit?
No, it's a pretty basic thing that he's saying. Basically, yeah. All he's saying, if you're looking, the defenders are looking to play opposition team, put a kind of high press on. You know, don't take any unnecessary risks with that forward pass. Sometimes it's better to beat the press by playing a ball over the initial press. You know, into your centre forward on the halfway line, make the opposition players turn, head back towards the half. But that's just kind of common sense stuff, really. I think we've seen a bit of that with Ireland actually the last maybe number of games. I think initially when Stephen came in, you saw a little bit of indecision when we were looking to play, or we were getting the ball pinched off, was, you know, that kind of forced press. Teams were having a bit of that initial press, I should say, having a bit of joy against us. But the last few games, you've noticed when we've been playing, teams have been pressing us. We've been playing that ball around the corner into the centre forwards, feet, Callum Robinson, Alameda, a little bit quicker. Mm. You know what I mean? So kind of less risk, not just less risk for me, but it's the kind of common sense thing to do. So yeah, I wouldn't, you know, sometimes you can overblow stuff. Like, it's a little bit technical what he says, so people can get blown away.
Super I'm
coach,
guilty.
But yeah, basically what he's saying is don't pass it to someone else out of your penalty box if he's marked, you know what I mean? Just pass it to someone who isn't marked a bit higher up the pitch. That's basically what it means. But yeah, it's interesting, that kind of high press that he's talking about, you know, high defensive line.
Yeah,
that'd be very interesting. You know, Liverpool are probably the best exponents of that, and kind of continue to do so. But they do it, and they're kind of comfortable doing it because they have absolute, you know, turbocharged centre halves in terms of Van Dijk, Gomez, Konate, now players whose like recovery speed is absolutely phenomenal. You know, if Manchester United can't get Varane on the pitch and have to go with Harry Maguire and Lindelof at centre half, I'm not exactly sure at times if that kind of high press is going to suit you when teams are throwing the ball in behind down the sides. And Harry Maguire has got to do 260 degree turn and start running towards the edge of his penalty box. So,
but one of them is going to have to play alongside Varane. So even just with one of them on the pitch, is that a problem?
Well, I think it can be. Yeah, if opposition teams are good enough, they're clever enough to recognise what you're doing, and they can isolate that little bit of a chink in your team. And Harry Maguire is that, you know, in terms of his kind of mobility and his athleticism. And if you're going to kind of press high up the pitch, you have to sacrifice your modern game. You have to sacrifice your fullbacks. Generally, you can't press high up the pitch and keep your fullback nice and narrow and kind of babysit your centre half on that side of the pitch. You pretty much have to send almost everybody up the pitch and leave yourself 2v2, 3v3 at the back. And if teams can work the ball into those areas down the sides, if centre halves now predominantly have to be comfortable, you know, playing 1v1. That's the modern game. You know, I wouldn't just say the very top clubs. Most clubs now, most managers have the same kind of philosophy in terms of pressing, you know, committing high numbers up the pitch and asking the centre halves, look, you're going to have to defend 1v1 a lot of the time. You're going to have to be comfortable doing it. And the defenders who are comfortable doing it, generally the ones like who can shift over the ground, you know, mobile, quick, you know, got all those kind of athletic, physical attributes, actually, as opposed to maybe kind of, you know, how good they are defensively, decision making. I think it's very difficult now to have, you know, to be slow and cumbersome over the ground now as a centre half. I mean, it would have been such a struggle for me in the modern game, for that reason. It's so difficult for me, like, you know what I mean, I would literally have panic attacks when I was playing centre half and me full back, you know, got further than 15 yards away from me at any time during the game. You know, I got isolated in the pitch, I'd have heart palpitations, like, yeah. You know what I mean, literally be screamed. The natural reaction then was to drag people around you, pull people around you, centre half, get your full back in, centre midfielder, get a bit of protection in front of you. That's how we played it then, and that was actually encouraged to a certain extent. Now it's the opposite. We got to press, it's the high press now, isn't it? So to press high, you've got to commit people into high areas of the pitch, and to do that, of course, you leave yourself, your two centre halves or three centre halves, wherever it is now, exposed more now than they've ever been. And such now is the onus on them to be able to defend in kind of 1v1 situations, like, you know, in and around that kind of halfway line. That's not easy. And I don't think Manchester United necessarily are best equipped to do that, particularly when Varane's not available. So yeah, so that'll be interesting. I think that's the sign of a good coach, Owen. He wants to play a certain way, but very quickly assesses his squad and says, oof, not necessarily sure I have the players to do that.
Yeah.
Just need to modify things here a little bit. So that'll be interesting.
Just the other thing he was talking about last night was Mason Greenwood, who played and scored an unbelievable goal. And he says the continuity for him is to develop physically. That's the thing for his age. He's a great player. But my job, Ranić says, is to develop him, make an athlete out of him. And then if he manages to do that, he can become a regular player for this club. Have you noticed that as well? That's the physical bit for Greenwood?
I haven't actually, to be honest with you. That's one of the things I wouldn't have thought was an issue, actually. I think physically he's matured, actually, over the summer. I think Navy look at him as in terms of physical specimen. I don't look at Mason Greenwood and think he's got to toughen up a little bit. He needs another bit of body weight. You know, physically he can't deal with the Premiership. I haven't thought that for some time, to be honest with you. I think for me it's the opposite with Greenwood. Greenwood needs game time. And this is, for me, this goes back to the original argument. We won't recycle again about Ronaldo coming into the club. Because when Sancho signed for me, it made sense, Sancho coming to the football club, in terms that it pushed, for me, it pushed Mason Greenwood into a central striking position. Him and Cavani dovetailing that number 9 position for the course of the season. Might have mentioned it before. So Sancho coming in for me suggested, right, we're going to see Greenwood now play 25 to 30 games now, that central striking area. He could be United's next number 9 for the next kind of 10 years. I think he has that potential, his kind of shooting ability. We've seen it already in kind of cameo roles. If I was a Manchester United fan, I wouldn't get excited about that. But Ronaldo coming in at the last minute has just, like, you know what I mean? That's kind of ended. Now it's a kind of, well, he's not going to play centre forward now. Well, he's going to play on the right, but where does Sancho play? So that's the problems that have been created in terms of maybe a little of an overload of players now in that area of the pitch. And it's a shame for him, because him for me, like, I've said it for a while, and I think potentially he's the one. He could be the best at a lot, but we have to find out. He needs minutes on the pitch now to see potentially could he be Manchester United's number 9 for the next 10 years. He just needs to get the opportunity, and I'd suggest a run of games in that early the pitch, rather than spending time in the gym and potentially bulking up. If that's what Ranić is suggesting, that surprises me a little bit.
And it's certainly what he said yesterday. Like, it's interesting, we would assume that maybe the Palace game gives us a greater indication as to what Ranić is planning. And if he goes with a 4-2-2-2 again this weekend, like, you had Fernandes and Sancho and those two tens, and then you had Ronaldo and Rashford up front in the front two, how does Greenwood fit into those front four then, if this is the formation he continues to play?
Yeah, well, I think he can. I think he's versatile, Rashford. I don't think we should get too carried away with 4-2-2. Oh, this is groundbreaking stuff.
It's not groundbreaking.
But it changed. But the team shape changes any moment in the game. In possession, you know, out possession. Yeah. Wingers coming on the inside into those little pockets that you're talking about. That wouldn't be highly unusual. Wide players coming and playing on the inside, and fullbacks, providing the width on the overlap. Like, we're kind of splitting hairs a little bit in terms of what he's putting on the pitch on the moment. It isn't like, wow, this is phenomenal, we just haven't seen this in the Premiership. Like, you know what I mean? It's pretty familiar.
It's just different for United, I think, is probably.
Of course, there's small little adjustments. Yeah, absolutely. But if you're talking about Greenwood, for me, can play any wide area, any kind of, from whatever you're talking about. But where I want to see him is that central striking position, because I think his shooting ability off his left and right foot is pretty phenomenal. We talk about Ronaldo, how good he is. Ronaldo's probably the best 25 yards in, ball at either foot, in terms of ability to hit the target regularly and with kind of precision and power. But Greenwood's got a bit of that. We've seen it already, shooting pair left right foot the last couple of years, pretty phenomenal, actually, you know what I mean? So somebody's got that kind of armory in terms of shooting ability. Really common sense, let's get him into central areas of the pitch where we can get him on the ball, where he can actually utilise that, not necessarily in kind of wide areas, tight to the touchline, where he's not going to have that opportunity. He's too far away from the goal. So that's the reason I'm thinking, get him into those kind of central areas often enough, get him the ball, feed him. He looks as if, is a natural goal scorer here. So yeah, and that system you're talking about, he could play up top alongside Ronaldo, why not? The problem comes when you play with one central striker and Ronaldo pretty much plays, then you're looking, then he's got to compete against the likes of Rashford, Martial, and others, Sancho in particular, for those remaining two kind of wide positions. I think those other players are probably more suited to those positions, Sancho in particular and Rashford off the left and Sancho off the right. I think predominantly that's where they want to play, where they're most comfortable and where they're probably at their most effective and at their best. But Greenwood, for me, potentially still could contribute more as an attacking central striker. So it'll be interesting to see his development and how Ranić sees his how his role in the team in the second half of the season.
The other interesting Manchester United talking point this week was that Randick has brought in Manchester United's first full-time psychologist, sports psychologist in 20 years. 20 years
brings me back to the first psychologist there. I got introduced to, bless him, he did age that year. Do you know, you look at somebody comes in the door at the start of the season and then at the end of the season and 8 months later he's walking out the door and you think he's almost a broken man.
Was this at Wimbledon by any chance?
Oh no, we never saw one at Wimbledon. No. Joe wouldn't have been stupid enough to bring out psychologists at Wimbledon. No chance.
That would have been too extreme.
I think it was actually Birmingham, right? I think my last couple of years, yeah, I would have been 30. That was the first time I had a bit of a... That was a tough one. No, I suppose attitudes were changing a little bit, but still a bit of resistance inside the dressing room even then. Oh, come on, Gaffer, do us a favour.
Yeah.
Particularly when you started, wasn't too bad the team dynamic when he came in, kind of team initially was kind of, you know, team meeting, everybody was in the room offering a little bit of information, etc., you know, so yeah, the lads had suck it up, yeah, whatever type thing, but then it was kind of a little bit more tailored, wasn't it? A bit more individual 1v1 sessions with people, and so that was interesting, you know what I mean, and there was some people who kind of embraced it a little bit. It was interesting. Now, people you wouldn't think, and you'd think you see them disappearing. You think, where's he going? I just had a chat with Fred or whatever. Fred the Foot, actually, I think that he was the footman, Fred the Foot. He was a psychologist in his own right, really nice fella. But now the psychologist himself, I think, found it difficult, a bit of resistance initially. That changed over time. You know, it's not even a conversation people have now. But I think it's very much an individual thing. It wasn't for me, to be honest with you, in terms of the individual stuff. I like the group dynamic in terms of bringing the group together and having a bit of dialogue and encouraging, being a kind of conduit in some respects to get the group talking.
Okay.
Yeah. So I could understand that. But I always used to think, well, a good manager should be able to do that. You know,
yeah.
A good manager's got to be a good communicator. So for me, always a little bit, why are you bringing someone from the outside in? You know what I mean? That really should be your response. You got those qualities as a manager, person, that kind of human interaction, that type of thing. So, yeah. But in terms of the group dynamic, yeah, it was absolutely fine because I felt, yeah, there's a little bit of value in that, kind of the group together. But not for me, the individual never really jumped on board in terms of the individual stuff. But other players did and kind of quite embraced it.
Do you remember your first time being brought away individually with a sports psychologist?
Well, no, because it didn't happen.
It didn't happen. So you were obviously asked.
Yeah, it was, but no, it wasn't. It wasn't. It was a type of thing where you can't force people, can
sure.
you? You got an appointment, yeah. You got to turn up. It's ridiculous, like, you know what I mean? So it's got to be kind of open. That's the nature of it. He's available. He's here. If you want to go and see him, you know, it's got to be something you want to kind of commit to yourself. So
why were you reluctant?
I'm not too sure to be. I was probably at that stage, to be honest. I was in my 30s then. Was it early 30s? I would have been up at Birmingham. And you just feel as if you're in a place there mentally. I am what I am to a certain extent, and you know, your understanding of the game on a load of different levels. It's, you know, it's pretty much enshrined, isn't it? I'd never say I had the attitude. I know everything. I don't need to learn anything. You know what I mean? But just didn't feel as if at that point I knew my game, I knew what I was about physically, you know, qualities, you know, a lot of experience behind me, a lot of games, so I didn't really feel, I wasn't overly comfortable, I got to be honest with you, I wasn't overly comfortable putting myself in that environment, kind of football discussion. If I had been a coach, let's sit down and talk about your game, your performance at the weekend, absolutely no problem, we'll, you know, really engaged in that. But sitting down with someone, him saying, well, you know, how's the family? Once you start going down that line, I would have been overly comfortable, to be honest with you.
Would that go for all of your football family, as it were, at Birmingham City? That you wouldn't have been necessarily sharing with personal details.
I think that's probably right. Yeah, maybe would have been the most open of books anyway, in people generally, even in people maybe would have been reasonably close to, like, at the football club. So yeah, maybe it's not a football thing. Maybe that's just a me thing in general. Like, you know what I mean? But now a few of the lads, I must admit, a few of the lads, I looked at from a distance, and I never discourage anybody. You know, I'd always say, well, look, it's up to you. It's, you know, keep an open mind and in you go. Like, and some lads, it would surprise you. Some lads would go in and you think, and then they'd continue it, and you think, well, that's interesting. Like, so, yeah, whatever. We're all different, aren't we? You know what I mean? So. But yeah, has become, I wouldn't say a vital component, to be honest with you, but I think it's just another tool, isn't it? It's someone who's there. If anybody, a couple of lads can get a bit of a benefit from it, you know, funny creatures, really, you know, professional athletes, you know what I mean? And like psychologically, confidence, all of those things, like mental strength in, doesn't take much, lack of form, confidence, a bit of a dip. Personal stuff we've mentioned there, like stuff going on, maybe all that's been bottled up, you know, all of these kind of things, you know, it's multi-layered, isn't it? So to have somebody around who can kind of maybe tap into that, I can understand it. But like I said, for me, a really good manager, a really good communicator, somebody, that's what a great manager is, has that, those attributes in terms of can assess people, understands people, personality, bit of one-to-one, you know, when it's needed, can actually resolve those issues. But no, I can understand it in principle. I certainly wouldn't laugh it off. Never did, really, to be honest with you, but never really embraced it myself.
Yeah, I think what you're saying there is true. I think that's probably why United haven't had one for 20 years, is that the managers have probably felt, I can do this, or maybe they have a little bit too much control, or are giving too much, or they have too much of an impact on maybe the mindset of the players going into the weekend. I'm not sure. But
and it's the group, isn't it? And it's a different time now, isn't it? The Premiership's different now in terms of players coming in from the continent, from abroad, obviously being schooled in that respect, haven't you? Just like kind of different animals in terms of how they think, what they're prepared to accept, what they're closed off to. So I think it's about understanding the dressing room as well. Certain dressing rooms I was in, you mentioned maybe the one at Wimbledon, but I mean, there's...
Imagine a psychologist in that dressing room. That would have been...
just no point. Like, you know, bully jokes and stuff like that's no good. You know, you don't want to come in. You don't want people to be kind of disrespected or professionals at the end of the day. But you have to understand your dressing room as well. And, you know, there would have been dressing rooms I would have played in. It would have been a no-no. You know what I mean? Just would have been no point in bringing someone like that in. You know, the dressing room really wouldn't have been open to that type of input from somebody back then.
I just want to tell you about our competition this morning. All this week we're giving you the chance to win a Whoop 4.0 digital fitness tracker for you and two mates. They come with 12-month memberships, and as the prize winner you'll win €1,000 in cash. You can check out the OTB social channels to enter. This great Christmas gift is all with thanks to our friends at Whoop. Check out whoop.com for more information. It is 2 minutes past eight. You're with us here on OTB AM, and we're going to be joined a little bit later on by Luke Fitzgerald. We're going to be joined by Jess Kelly for her gift guide after 9 o'clock, and we're going to be joined by Dermot Corrigan very shortly indeed as well, to get the Spanish angle on the Champions League this week, because there are a few big stories. Barcelona dropping to the Europa League, for example, is the big one from last night. Just a couple of other ones just to throw your way, Kenny, before then. Chelsea and Liverpool obviously in action this midweek as well. Chelsea, the result, not insignificant. They finished second. They could get a terrible draw on Monday, and all of a sudden drawing with Zenit last night is a much bigger story than it is this morning. But are we starting to see a few cracks maybe in this Chelsea team over the last couple of weeks? A few results. Thomas Tuchel pretty unhappy in the aftermath of last night. It's becoming a little bit of a theme. I'm not saying it's a trend just yet, but we've seen a few moments of disappointment from Tuchel recently.
Yeah, a little bit of a drop off in terms of team performance. Been a little bit critical actually, Tuchel, and that's, haven't heard too much of that since he's been in the door at the football club, particularly the tail end of last season, and even the start of this season. To be honest with you, I think like level of performance has been really high. They've been really impressive, Chelsea. Talking about Manchester United, kind of maybe, you know, lack of cohesion in terms of what they're doing. Couldn't really point a finger at Chelsea in that respect. Look really well drilled. You know, whatever team goes on the pitch, everybody understands their roles, kind of playing with kind of real intensity, you know, individual quality, which they know they have defensively. Kind of, they've been quite secure, haven't they? Never quite, to be honest with you. I say, yeah, they have been very secure and whatever. A lot of people have lauded them for that, but never quite bought into it 100%, that kind of back three. Look at that back three of Thiago Silva. Just feel Thiago Silva, a lot of talk from this season, player of the season, etc., and he's a wonderful player, has been. Just sense though, at the moment, just looking at him physically, just in terms of his mobility, just signs there now, really just beginning to struggle a little bit. Is he playing badly? No, he's not playing badly. Such a good read of the game, etc., etc. Experience, absolutely, but just feel now when he gets a little bit isolated, speaking to you about defenders getting isolated, 1v1, big spaces around them, just feel as if now he's beginning to struggle a little bit in those kind of situations. Rudiger as well is a funny one for me, out of contract in summer, hasn't signed a new contract. Again, somebody I'm never quite, you know, he puts in a performance, I think, yeah, I'm getting behind him, but there's always always a decision there, decision making, sometimes winning. He's got that aggressive nature for me, always looking for a fight with people. Just don't quite trust him as well, like 100% of the time. Trevor Chalup is a lovely young player. He's only going to get better. Aspilicueta, for me, brilliant player as he is, again, just on the decline. So very quickly for me, people look at Chelsea thinking, oh, defensively he's absolutely rock solid, Christensen as well, no problems there. But for me, very quickly that could change within a year. Thiago could be out the door, Rüdiger could be gone.
Yeah.
If he throws his toys out of his pram, doesn't get the money that he's wanted, he's gone. Aspilicueta is a year older, you know what I mean, he's not going to get any quicker. So all of a sudden you're looking at defensive unit and thinking, they've got a little bit of work to do there. You know, Tomori's over at AC Milan, they've let him go, he was a real talent. So suddenly they've got a few issues there. Now that's maybe a little bit down the road, but at the moment it's not perfectly at the moment, and they need to resolve it, certainly in terms of the Premiership title, because it's going to be so close. Now Liverpool are coming on strong, they're beginning to find their mojo again. Manchester City, you know, are going to be ruthless in terms of, you know, churning out results. So they just can't afford too many drop-offs, little blips here and there. Yeah, you can suffer them, you can suck them up and even go and still grab the title, but can't afford too many dips in form, which you feel as if they're just in at the moment. They need to come out of it pretty quickly.
We saw Reece James playing in midfield last night. This has clearly just become an area now where Tuchel is getting a few small worries. It's because of the fitness issues that they've had in midfield. Obviously, Kante struggled recently. I mean, in an ideal world, you would have himself and Kovacic available, and then Jorginho and Saul, you'd have four brilliant midfielders there. But the fact that he's trying him out in midfield probably suggests that Tuchel's not 100% happy with the options that he does have.
Yeah, well, I can understand it. I can understand why Sal Niguez came in. I think him playing at his peak a couple of years ago, I was a huge fan of his. Atletico Madrid, absolutely phenomenal. Nearly went to Manchester United, was linked a couple of times. A real box-to-box, all action, you know, defensively solid, mobile, technically very good. But I don't know what his issues are with Atletico Madrid the last year or so. He's looked a little bit off in terms of fitness-wise coming to Chelsea, so the jury's out on him. I've always felt Chelsea, in terms of that central midfield, you know, people probably know how I feel in terms of Jorginho. I wouldn't be his biggest fan. Technically, I think he's very good, lovely footballer. But for me, you carry him out of possession in terms of his defensive qualities, I don't think are good enough. And I think that's exaggerated even more so when Kante doesn't play, because Kante picks up the slack for him and everybody else in that central midfield there in terms of defensive work that he's done. So when he's out of the team, definitely they have a real issue. Kovacic and Jorginho doesn't cut it in there as a partnership. Niguez probably not at it at the moment, so you're looking for that. Who's going to give us that bit of physicality in there, that kind of defensive slidity? Now you're searching for me a little bit in terms of that central midfielder. So that's why I suppose Reece James comes into the equation. Loftus Cheek's played in there, he doesn't give you that. He's an attack minded player, he wants to get ahead of the ball and contribute in the opposite half of the pitch. So I think Reece James, I've always said, he looks as if he could play central midfield for me, the qualities which he has. You know, he's that kind of versatile, he could understand the game, defensively strong. So I wouldn't surprise me if he perseveres with that going forward if Kante isn't available. So yeah, you're right, just small little issues, problems that he needs to resolve very quickly in terms of mounting a Premiership challenge. Mm-hmm. I think he needs to find a solution pretty quickly. Not that I'm expecting a massive drop off.
No, but the standard is so high.
It's not going to take much.
Yeah. Who are you actually tipping at the moment for the Champions League? Like, are you looking at Liverpool and Manchester City from Tuesday night and saying that's title credential right there in the context of this competition?
Yeah, and I can't see past the English clubs, really. I know we're going to be speaking about Spanish football. It's hard to get too, well, can't get excited about Barcelona. They're out. Real Madrid, obviously, a little bit of a renaissance under Ancelotti, but I still have my doubts about them. Obviously, you throw maybe Bayern Munich into the equation, but apart from that, I wouldn't be getting too excited about PSG either, particularly off the back of what we've seen against Manchester City. So now for me, it's still the three English teams which are favourites. I think Liverpool, just the last couple of weeks, just feels as if it's coming together there. Van Dijk has put a couple of performances in the last couple of weeks, suggesting physically he's getting very close to where he was previously, and that was an issue for him in the season. His mobility looked a little bit restricted, lack of confidence in his body, and that was a little bit of a worry. Seems to have put that behind him. That's massive for Liverpool. Robertson coming back in, that defensive unit seems to be back together. Not only back together, but you could argue even strengthened some of the performances Konate is putting in. Again, very impressive midweek against AC Milan. So you could be making an argument soon that that defensive unit now obviously stronger than it ever was, with potentially Konaté coming into the team. Front three are doing what they're doing, and actually now beginning to see the emergence. Tyler Morton put in a performance the other night at the San Siro, oof, which kind of performance I looked at it and thought, wow, this is impressive. Some of that young in age, such a mature performance for somebody in that kind of central midfield area. So again, you're thinking, woof, you know, there's more to come. Here's a player maybe could add something kind of going forward, Curtis Jones. So for Liverpool, for me, are just getting a bit of momentum behind them as well, and we've seen that previously with them. Once they get into that kind of mindset, hit that level of performance, get that kind of mentality, that kind of drive going, they're almost impossible to stop.
Yeah. Manchester City then, like, I mean, there's obviously the sense that there is a possibility they could do what they did last season, which is just pull away from the gap entirely, pull away from the crowd entirely come January, February. But it does look like that was just down to Liverpool being poor last season, and, yeah, and they're going to be able to keep on their heels if nobody else.
Yeah, no, I think they will be. Probably Liverpool had to be probably two them. I still think Chelsea could go to the war of the three clubs. Literally could go to like second last game of the season. All of those three teams could still win it. I think it could be that close. Yeah, Manchester City, yeah, exactly the same. Different type of beast to Liverpool in terms of, you know, how they play, manager's philosophy, etc., but just as effective. I just think the only thing that can get in their way, and I've said it before, is the manager. And that's happened for me. It happened in the Champions League final last year in terms of the team that he put on the pitch. I think it cost them, and I think it has cost them previously in terms of just maybe as good a coach as he is, just overthinking things and actually handicapping his teams at times in terms of the starting 11 that he puts on the pitch. You never feel with Klopp, he kind of overcomplicates things in terms of the setup of the team and the individuals. You know, few and far between, or I can remember some of the big games Liverpool have had the last couple of years under Klopp. It's a team coming on the pitch and you're thinking, whoa, what's he thinking there?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In terms of, not much in terms of selection, but in terms of, you know, positioning people around the pitch. You know, I mean, you could argue maybe, you know, when Alden played ahead of Kay or stuff like that, but not to the case where he'd be like, well, what's happening? Fabinho, left wing, what's he thinking? None of that, you know what I mean? Just simplify, understand your structures, what you're doing, keep it simple for people, get them in their best positions, get the balance of the team right, and kind of off you go. I just think Manchester City have got that wrong disastrously, particularly in Champions League, like you're talking about there. Can they go at key moments, knockout in the knockout stages at the past couple of years? I think the manager's got it wrong. I genuinely feel he got it wrong in the Champions League final last year, now playing with no holding central midfield. You're talking about Chelsea at the moment, yeah. You know, a little bit kind of oof, struggling a little bit of out of kilter, out of balance in that central midfield area.